Blog Talk Radio.
YA, it's not just for young adults anymore. Anyone who reads it knows that most YA is timeless and ageless. And not to mention, it's good for people who have short attention spans. Celebrating coming-of-age stories, YA Yay celebrates all ages, genders, and genres. Join us as we shout YA Yay. And good afternoon, or good evening, depending on what part of the country you're in. Welcome to this month's YA Yay. I'm your host, Jeff Adams, and I'm joined, as always, by W.T. Prater. How's it going today?
Groovy, great, and grand. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. And I like your response very much also. I'm excited to welcome Nina Mansfield to the show today. She's a playwright as well as the author of the YA mystery Swimming Alone. Nina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
So to start off, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your writing?
Okay, well, I've been writing for a while. I started off writing plays. My first published and produced play was sort of a dark comedy that dealt with suicide and sort of tortured love, called No Epilogue. It's published with a little company called One Act Play Depot, and I've seen a few productions of it over the past years. And I was sort of hooked after that. I was writing as a kid. I was writing poetry and short stories for a long time. And then I started writing plays, and I thought, you know what, I want to write a young adult mystery novel. And I gave that a shot, and out came Swimming Alone.
And if I recall right, you've also got some mystery short stories in there as well, along with the plays.
I do. I published a short story about, I think, 5 years ago, 6 years ago at this point, in Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine. And that one takes place in a Vermont summer stock community, a mystery that a woman goes to sort of, she's not really investigating. She's sort of returning to the theater and is reminded of this mystery. And I don't want to really say any more about that story. It's called An Othello of Infinite Jest, which is a line from Hamlet. And if you read the story, you sort of know why it's called that. I actually recently wrote another short story that it's hot off the presses. I sent it out some places for publication, so we'll see. But that one also takes place at in a theater community, this time off Broadway. So I'm inspired a lot by theater for my short mystery fiction, it seems.
Nice. And tell us a little bit about Swimming Alone.
So Swimming Alone is a story that was inspired by some time I spent in Rhode Island. I used to vacation there when I was a kid with my grandparents, and we'd always stay in a beach bungalow. And one day I just started writing, and in addition to being inspired by theater and the life in the theater, I'm also inspired a lot by ocean, the sounds of the oceans, the smells of the ocean. So when I sat down to write the story, it just started taking place in this town, which eventually became the fictional town of Beach Point. And the protagonist is 15-year-old Kathy Banks. I actually finished writing the first draft after my first year of teaching high school. So I was really inspired by that snarky, sometimes obnoxious high school voice, and I hope I've captured that with my character. And I also wanted to write a story because I had a lot of reluctant readers when I was teaching during my first year teaching high school. And I found that students really like stories with a lot of suspense and cliffhangers and action, so I wanted to write a story that they might enjoy. So hopefully I did that.
And
I'm just curious
I'm sorry, what?
I'm just going to talk.
No, go ahead, Will.
So I'm curious because I'm into theater. I'm a playwright. I love writing plays. For you, what is the difference between writing a play and writing a book, and how do you decide what format your characters are really going to want to talk through? Because they're such dynamically different formats.
They are, and I've been thinking a lot about this lately. I've been getting asked this question a lot lately, in fact. And I think with my plays, I get a line of dialogue stuck in my head. and I think, who's this character? What do they want? And I start writing, and a character forms on the. I also used to do a lot of improv when I back in my acting days, so I really start improvising in my head with these two made-up characters, and maybe a third will enter. And so it's really based in the dialogue and what the characters want. I think with my fiction, I get an image, sometimes a smell, sometimes a sound, often a setting, and I start imagining this world that then the characters pop into. And it's never like I'm thinking, oh, should this be a short story, or should this be a novel, or should this be a play? It usually sort of just comes to me in that form, and I think, oh, this is a play that I'm writing. Sometimes there's a few stories I've thought, like, what should it be, a play or a novel? And in that case, I actually wrote a graphic novel script because I thought it wasn't a play, it wasn't quite a novel, it was very visual, and I wrote a script for a graphic novel that's as yet unpublished. But so that's kind of how I decide. It sort of just comes to me that way.
Cool. Is that essentially what led you to make the, I guess, the transition from doing plays to doing short stories to taking on the longer form of a novel?
It possibly. I tried writing fiction earlier in my life, and I'd always loved, of course, reading novels and short stories, and I think it's something I always wanted to do at some point. I think I wrote my first mystery story when I was in seventh grade, and I gave it to my reading teacher, and he said, great story, but you really need more than one suspect. But I think it's just something I always wanted to try, and because I was acting, I first started really with writing plays as a serious writer, and then I thought, well, I've always wanted to write fiction. Well, let me give that a shot. And of course, some stories had already, I'd been writing fiction. I have probably a dozen unfinished novels that I'd been writing, and Swimming Alone was the first one I sat down and said, okay, I'm actually going to do this. I'm going to finish this novel. I'm going to take it seriously. And it took a while, but I did it.
That's so awesome. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
How would you describe, like, the difference between writing?
I'm sorry. I'm just apparently determined to talk over you. Go ahead.
How would you describe the difference between plotting and writing a play versus plotting and writing a novel?
I have to say the plotting of my plays has been a lot harder. I tend to write a lot of 10-minute plays, so that in itself makes a very big difference. They just have this sort of natural arc, and I can't even really describe it because I've written so many of them at this point that I can't quite describe how I plot them out. I just know these characters want something, and they go for it, and eventually it comes to some kind of resolution. And it happens fairly organically when I'm writing the play. Plotting longer plays, I actually have a longer play that got produced last fall called Losing Our Heads, the Guillotine Play. But honestly, what I did, as I took a lot of shorter plays and kind of tried to work them together. And I think my results weren't entirely successful. I'm actually planning to rewrite that play. So with the plotting of the novel, I also start organically, but then I go back and I outline and I think, okay, where is this going? And with the mystery novel, obviously, it's leading to the conclusion of who are the killers and what exactly happened here and why did this dead body appear and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm constantly sort of going back and figuring out, okay, if this is who the killer is, then this is what I need to put in here. And these are the red herrings, and these are the scenes that are going to get my character to the end of the novel. And I suppose I could take a similar tactic with playwriting as well. But I think because my plays are so short, I don't quite do the same thing.
So I'm curious. I don't know a lot about Swimming Alone. Could you give us a brief, just a plot synopsis of what that particular book is about?
Sure. So there's 15-year-old Kathy Banks, and she's staying in Beach Point, Rhode Island. She's there because her parents are going through this messy divorce, and they've decided to ship her off to stay with her aunt. Now, her aunt, it's her cool aunt, of course, and she happens to be this world-famous mystery writer named Roberta McCabe. So she's in Rhode Island writing, finishing up her next novel, and there's Kathy. And, of course, she's without a cell phone because she dropped it in a toilet and her parents wouldn't get her new ones. And I think that's kind of essential for a mystery. You got to get rid of the cell phones or else it becomes too easy.
Right.
And she has to get a job, so she ends up getting this job at this bookstore. And eventually she makes friends. She finds this cute guy that she's goggling over, but it seems kind of hopeless because he has a girlfriend. And there's his somewhat dorky cousin who has a crush on her. And, of course, she doesn't realize that maybe he's the guy that she should be dating. But and meanwhile, while all of this is happening, her new friend, who she works at the bookstore with, disappears. And, of course, also in this town, there's a serial killer on the loose. She actually says at the top of the novel that she can't believe that her parents sent her to the only town in America with an active serial killer on the loose. So when her friend disappears, naturally she assumes that the serial killer is to blame for this, and she starts trying to figure things out any way she can. So, and if I say more than that, I think it's giving too much away.
Fair enough. And I just want to let people know that there is a buy link for Nina's book on the episode page, and there will be one updated on the website as well, which is www.writersonlinenetwork.com. So if you want to buy a copy of this book, which you should do, then you can go to the episode page and scroll down, and there's a find out more link there, and like I said, it'll be on the website as well.
Cool. And the ebook is actually on sale right now. I think it's for like $1.99 or something. So very affordable. The sale, I think, is going to end at Halloween. So I know that my publisher, Fire and Ice YA, is holding a Halloween sale for a bunch of the more mysterious titles in their lineup.
Awesome. Yeah, Raw, I might have to go and do a book splurge.
Yeah.
How did you get inspired to start writing mystery? Because it sounds like, from what you said, your plays, and certainly from what you said of your short stories, revolve around some sort of a mystery element.
Yeah, well, some of my plays, the Guillotine play certainly has that death element, although it's a wacky comedy about the guillotine. I think I'm a little morbid. I think that's part of it. I read a lot of...
Yay, morbidity!
But there's always kind of a humorous element. And I have to say, many of my short plays aren't mysteries. Sometimes, like No Epilogue, which is a one-act play, has this death and mysterious element. But some of them are just wacky comedies. I have a whole bunch of plays that are these wacky relationship comedies. But I read a lot of mysteries as a kid. I loved Agatha Christie. I loved the books of Joan Lowery Nixon and Lois Duncan, especially like 7th, 8th grade. I started reading those. I loved Sherlock Holmes short stories. I loved watching Murder, She Wrote with my mom. That kind of dates me, I think. But... I loved watching and reading mysteries. So, and of course, Nancy Drew, even before any of that, I grew up on the Nancy Drew books. So I think...
I love the Nancy Drew books. I don't care. I know they're for girls. I don't care. I still read
books. I don't think anything's for girls or for boys. I think it's all, everything's for everybody. So,
yay.
And actually, some people have asked me, like, oh, is Swimming Alone more for girls? And I think... probably in terms of marketing, maybe, but I've had a lot of guys read my book, and not even like teen guys. I've had men in their 60s read and enjoy Swimming Alone. So
that's awesome.
But, and I think every good book is in some ways a mystery, and I might be generalizing too much, But I think there's always something you want to know. It might not be a murder mystery, but there's something that hooks you in that you want to know more about this character. And writers don't reveal absolutely everything right away. You kind of have to keep reading to find out whether it's the mystery of, you know, whether these two people will get together romantically or not. It's still this what's going to happen next element that I really love. And of course, in a murder mystery or a suspense novel, that's very important. But I think it's with all books in some sense.
I totally agree. I think that if you start a book and you know from the very get-go how the book is going to end, there's no reason in reading the book. Like, there has to be some kind of, you know, there has to be something to grip you and hook you in. So you do something in the way that you're developing yourself as an author that I appreciate so much. Well, there's a lot of stuff that you're doing, but the thing that that writers sometimes forget about is networking. And just looking through the various groups that you're a part of, why did you decide that you were going to, because a lot of authors, you know, they, I don't want to say that they don't socialize, but they don't understand how important it is to integrate yourself into, like, the Dramatists League and the Mystery Writers of America, the International Thriller Writers, and that. How did you decide that you were going to go about what organizations you wanted to be a part of?
I think it's true. Writers are very solitary sometimes, and we sit in our offices, or for me it's often at my dining room table, and we write. And it's really kind of sort of lonely. And I think one of the first, I joined the Dramatists Guild mainly because I'd heard, oh, I was writing plays and I should join the Dramatists Guild. And you do get a lot of information and feedback, and there are events that you can go to. And when I started writing fiction and I was writing young adult fiction, I had just started sort of submitting my work and, of course, getting some rejection letters and not really knowing how do I write a query letter and am I doing the right thing to submit my work to an agent? And I ended up joining the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators at that time. And I found that there was a slew of information out there if I just asked. I started visiting a bulletin board called Berla Kay's Blue Board, which was for children's and young adult writers. And there was and that's actually now been integrated into the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. But there was a ton of information, and there were a lot of writers going through the same anxiety and angst about sending their work out that I was. And since I wrote mysteries, I found the Mystery Writers of America. I had heard of them at some point. And again, I joined, and I find through them, I'm finding networking opportunities. On Thursday, for example, I'm going to be reading a selection from my book at KGB Bar down in the East Village in New York. They have a monthly reading series for their writers, and that's for both published and unpublished writers can get up there and read. They have monthly dinners where they bring in either published authors to speak or forensics experts or experts in the publishing field. And there's just so much information out there about not only to help me grow as a writer, but to find out how to market myself, because I'm learning this all now right after publishing my first book, how important it is to spread the word about the book, because nobody's going to read it if they haven't heard of it. So I think that organizations have a lot of information on that. So that's just kind of when I was looking for organizations to join, I thought, okay, which ones are going to not only help me grow as a writer, but also grow in terms of spreading the word about my book.
That's such an awesome mentality to have. I just have to say that.
Oh, thank you.
You mentioned in your introduction that, you know, one of the reasons you wanted to do Swimming Alone was because of the kind of books that you saw engaging your students.
Mm-hmm.
How else did, you know, being in the teaching high school environment kind of inform what you were doing in the book to reach them? And I don't think you said, what subject were you teaching also?
I teach, at the time I was just teaching English, but I teach English and drama. I think I got hooked on young adult literature when I was studying in grad school. I studied educational theater with teaching English at NYU, and we were asked to read a lot of young adult fiction as part of our preparation to become high school teachers. And I saw how there's just a lot of amazing young adult books out there. I was one of those people who hadn't read Harry Potter right when it came out because I thought, oh, it's a kid's book. I'm not going to read this. And then I read it, and I had to read the whole series immediately. So I saw how teens want to read about characters their age, characters who are maybe going through similar struggles. In Swimming Alone, the adults in Kathy's life aren't necessarily listening to her, and she's always not communicating as clearly as she should with them. But I think that kind of angst that teenagers feel of, you know, wanting to make friends and maybe having a crush who isn't paying attention to you, it's all in the book. So I wanted to write that kind of struggle. But I think also all my characters are kind of me, so I sort of had to channel my 15-year-old self to write the book.
So I'm just curious, when you're writing these characters, because we have, I'm very active in the local theater scene, and one of the teen groups is doing Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely abhor Pride and Prejudice. I have a real difficulty. I'm not a big fan of period pieces, but more than that, I need my women strong. I want to read, like, Buffy, and, you know, I want to read, like, women who don't take nothing. And
mm-hmm.
I know that's horrible English, but I'm just curious, when you're building up your characters in your novels, and you as a writer, like, what kind of female characters are out there that you really attempt to emulate, as far as, like, which ones would you cite as, okay, this person I could see as being a role model for my characters or for me as a writer?
Oh, gosh. Off the top of my head, I mean, there are so many of them. There are just so many. And then sometimes I feel like, oh, there's not enough. I mean, I don't know why, but from the, what's the series called? Elizabeth Sanders. Elizabeth? From the that very popular Swedish series,
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. I mean, she was not going to let anybody stop her.
So I think, but
when I'm writing, I'm not really thinking necessarily about these other characters. I'm honestly like, as I said, I think most of my characters are kind of me, who may not always be the strongest, but it's not like I'm a pushover. So I don't think my characters are pushovers, but they're kind of quirky. They're kind of a little bit of a mess sometimes. And yet they're certainly Kathy Banks in Swimming Alone. People aren't giving her the information she needs, and she's not gonna listen to she's not going to stop just because people are telling her that, no, you know, you shouldn't do this or you need to be safe. Her aunt is a little bit overprotective, and she doesn't stop just because people say don't do this.
See, I can handle messy characters. Messy characters don't bother me. I can even handle, like, I think that any character has to be well-rounded as far as being weak and being strong. I'm not personally attracted to male or female characters that kind of continually surrender themselves
to
the situation. I want to read characters that are, you know, maybe not the best book that I've read of recent is Atlanta Burning, which is a Chuck Wendig book. And Atlanta, the lead character in it, she is arguably, she is a girl who could, you know, very much let life take her over. She could surrender to her circumstances, but instead she's somebody who is in a horrible situation and fights to get her way out of it. And those are the type of books I love reading. Those are the types of TV shows I watch and things like that. So
yeah, I recently read City of Silver by Anna Maria Alfieri, the Fellow Mystery Writers of America member. And she's writing about 17th century Peru, where the women were just in these really kind of awful circumstances of being controlled by their husbands and their fathers. And there's quite a few female characters who just completely fight against that. And that was really awesome to read. So I definitely, I love really anybody fighting against some kind of oppression on some level. I love reading books like that. But I do think my characters, both male and female, are all a little wacky. I think about some of my plays. I have this play, Bite Me, that's a Halloween play. And the woman in the play brings home a vampire because she's decided that she and her husband are going to spend all eternity together. And it doesn't quite work out that way. Her husband's like, I don't know if I want to, you know, become undead for you. So she really takes matters into her own hands. And it's, of course, a wacky comedy. But I think a lot of my characters feel powerless and kind of have to fight against that because of the situation that they're in. And sometimes it ends up being quite humorous.
Cool. So we're coming up. We're just under 4 minutes, actually 2 minutes, as we kind of get close to winding down here. I'm going to ask you two questions at once, just so we can get them both in. I'm curious if you share your writing with your students and what they think that they have an author for a instructor, and also want to get in there what's coming up next for you. Going into 2016.
Well, I'm actually taking 2 years off from teaching right now. I have a small child at home, so I'll be returning to teaching. And I've shared some of my writing with my students, but I don't do it very often, just because I like to keep the two worlds separate. But right now, I'm actually working on sort of a paranormal romance thriller. I've been rewriting it for some time, and it's another young adult novel. So that's I'm sort of completely dedicated to my rewrites for that right now. So I'm hoping to get this current draft, it's probably on draft 4 or 5 right now, done before the end of the year.
That's exciting. That's exciting. And we're headed under 2 minutes now. Just want to remind people that we do have the buy links for Nina's books on the YA Yay page. And you can also find that on the One Radio website as well. I'll let you have the last question, Will, because I kind of snuck 2 in there at the last minute.
I mean, I just think that what you're doing is amazing. I want to applaud you. I don't even really know. I have a lot of questions that I could ask, but I don't think any of them could be answered in under 2 minutes. So I'm just going to be enamored by you for a minute and then let you have the last word. If people want to find you, what is your preferred social media?
I guess Facebook, that's my question. My Facebook writer page is great. Twitter at Nina J. Mansfield. And you can always find me at my website, www.ninamansfield.com.
Excellent. We certainly wish you all success.
Thank you. And thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. It's been great. So we'll wrap up for this month. Thanks again to Nina for joining us on this episode of YAA. Thanks to my co-host, W.T. Prater, and we'll be back next month just before Thanksgiving with our November episode, so we hope to see you then.